This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, Macca and Tass. Michael Kroger is the president of the Victorian Liberal Party, and he joins us online. We're having a few technical difficulties. Hopefully you're there, Michael. Good morning.
Good morning, Macca. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. The wonders of technology.
Well, digital technology.
We don't like technology.
No. Well, it's certainly not the NBN, that's for sure.
Actually, no.
Yes, we do. Now, I wanted to start off, surprisingly, Michael, with a difficult question. The Cormac Foundation, you and the Victorian Liberal Party, you're having, let's call it a little bit of a stoush about that. What stage is that at, if I might ask?
Well, I prefer you not to ask, to be honest.
I thought you might, but I know you'll evade, but, you know, give us a little bit of a picture if you can.
Well, it's just a family argument over some assets, and in due course it'll be sorted out, hopefully to everyone's satisfaction.
So a family argument over assets sounds like Christmas dinner to me.
That's rather obtuse, Michael.
Well, probably worth a bit more than the Christmas dinner, but these things happen, and you try and sort them out and as best you can and move on. So, you know, it's just one of those things you have to deal with from time to time in life, Macca.
It is.
Not everything goes to plan, my friend, in life. So you just soldier on as best you can.
You're very stoic.
Well, I've learned this. When you get to 60, as you will one day, you just put one foot in front of the other some days and just keep on going. And
well, that sounds tragic.
You've got to, most importantly, you've got to look on the footpath to make sure you don't tread on anything unpleasant.
Well, that's quite true. But it's actually, resilience is a really important quality as you get older. And, I was talking to someone before about it. You know, when you're younger, you tend to get phased by the unknown. And when you get older, you've had many, many life's experiences. And I remember a barrister telling me once he got up in court and he was leading evidence from the bar table, which you're not allowed to do. Witnesses give evidence, barristers don't. And I said to him afterwards, how did you get away with that? You were sort of presenting evidence to the judge. And he said it was just grey hair. The judge didn't want to disagree with this very distinguished barrister. He said it was just grey hair. He said, you learn just to move on and do what you can do. So sounds a bit trite. But,
No.
You know, as you get older, as you know, you've been through so many of life's twists and turns and things that might have surprised you, upset you, rattled you when you were younger, tend not to when you're older because, you know, there's always a new day, the sun shines. There's a lot of people in a lot worse positions than you're in life. And you're just thankful for that, at 60, you're still standing.
Michael, that's a great plug for turning 60. I'm now looking forward to it.
It's next year for me, so.
Oh, now, is it? Oh, well.
Yeah. Now, we asked you previously, during the marriage equality survey and on air, you said that you wouldn't say how you were going to vote because you didn't want to cause a commotion within the party, and I understood that. But previously you had said you did support it. Now the votes are closed. Can I ask, did you tick the yes box, Michael?
Well, I still would prefer not to get involved in the debate, and I know that'll enrage your listeners who think, why is this bloke even on the air? This
We're not asking you to get involved. We're just asking you to declare a personal position.
No, I know. But as you can understand, on our side of the fence, it's been a very difficult issue for a lot of people on both sides. and
I'm going to challenge that. I haven't seen a single missed truth on our side. I mean, if you just look at today's ad in News Corp papers, now's the time to vote. No, it says. And then it goes on to say, you know, don't forget to vote, blah, 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 blah. And then it says, it's how the law works. I mean, how untruth is that?
How the law works in what regard?
Well, that's what it says. I'm quoting. It says, a yes vote will mean radical LGBTIQ sex education, gender education programs are compulsory in our kids' classrooms. Well, that's a lie. Secondly, it says, it's how the law works. It's a lie also.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not quite sure what that means.
Exactly.
I know it sounds pathetic, but just within the way the Liberal Party works, if I wasn't president, I'd be very happy to give you a view. But as president, it's not my role to be involved in public debates about policy. As I said to you before, Mac, and you've got a very good memory, by the way.
Okay. Just give us a personal point of view, then, as opposed to a presidential point of view.
Mac knows my job is to stamp. Is to stamp received on letters and shuffle them around the office, lick the stamps, post the letters, and you know, occasionally when technology is working, we can send out the odd email or two. But you know, I let the parliamentary members deal with policy issues, whether it's euthanasia, whether it's this issue, whether it's, you know, all these issues. It's actually not the organisation's job, in the same way that I wouldn't, and I know this sounds trite, but I wouldn't like Malcolm Turnbull or Matthew Guy or others sort of public lecture in the organisation about important things like meeting dates and constitutional issues and all those things. So we just have this division where, you know, I post the mail and they deal with the important issues.
All right.
So that's, as Elvis Presley once said, that's the way it is.
Well, I did see an interesting tweet yesterday, I think, and it was from... It might have been from The Australian, but it had a picture of 12 people, writers, contributors to The Australian and to News Corp, who had voted for same-sex marriage. And whose face did I see on there as a supporter but your partner, Janet?
Mm-hmm.
What did you do to persuade her? Did you give her breakfast in bed? What did you do? Come on. Did you do the ironing or something?
upgrading my status to do the ironing. Janet Albrechts and various others, who were far more intelligent than me, by the way. She's got an underpricing. She did a PhD in the underpricing of initial public offerings. So she's a law graduate. So like most people, everyone reaches their own conclusion, and they've got every right to do so. And this is the great, you know, one of the great things about this country. There were some regrettable elements of the debate, but by and large, I don't think it's got to the point that many were worried about. Obviously, those who are intensely involved on one side or the other feel far more deeply what they consider to have been, the wrongs of each side. But I think to the overwhelming majority of the public, they understand the issue and they're not terribly persuaded by one side or the other. They can work these things out for themselves. And I think they have, and I'd be very surprised if the debate wasn't carried. Although that having been said, Macca, as you know, if you look at a lot of the polling around the world, it's been wrong and profoundly wrong.
Mm.
Trump wrong, Brexit wrong, the New Zealand election the other week wrong. It had the National Party winning. That was wrong. South Australian Labor were going to lose the South Australian election. That was wrong. Queensland election, wrong. So, but the gap in the published polls has been so large, 60s to 30s, that even though I don't expect it to be a 30-point gap...
I think the imperative word there is published polls, Michael, because we do know that private polls often paint a slightly different picture to the published polls.
That they can, but I'm not aware of any private polling that people have done. But you've got to understand what.
Oh, you haven't opened that envelope yet.
No. I've got to get the steam machine to open it all before the night. But sometimes private polls are different because they ask different questions.
Mm. Yeah.
And they're more insightful.
Yes.
Questions.
Yes.
They're not just yes or no. So, Michael,
if the outcome of this postal survey is affirmative, what do you think is the right thing for the federal government to do?
Well, the right thing for them to do, which I have absolutely no doubt they will do, is to bring in legislation forthwith. And some members of Parliament, on conscience grounds, will vote against the legislation, well, because their electorate's given them a strong view. But overwhelmingly, the members of the Liberal Party have said they'll be bound by the decision, even if they're against it, and they'll vote for it because that's the honourable thing to do and that's what they'll do. And then if the plebiscite is passed, the Act will be passed. I don't have any doubt about that whatsoever.
And do you think that's what they'll do, or do you think we'll end up with a convoluted piece of legislation that will discriminate against a whole range of people who might be supporting marriage equality?
No, I'm sure we won't see that because the question is simple. Some of the freedoms that people are worried about are more complex, but there is a bill that Dean Smith produced months ago which has gone through any number of hands of people looking at it, and I'm sure in the end the Prime Minister will put his foot down.
And it's widely supported by our community, by the way.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And he's a very good human being, Dean Smith. I don't know him well, but everything I've read or heard about him has been exemplary. And, you know, he's acted in complete good faith all the way through. And I know a lot of our federal MPs appreciated the time he spent with them, talking to them about the bill, amendments with freedoms, etc. So I have no doubt that the Prime Minister will come out and say, listen, this is what we said we're going to do, and this is what we're doing. And he will bring an end to concerns about things by reaching a position that will be a consensus position, which Malcolm Turnbull has done in relation to a less important for many people, but otherwise also important issue, which is the energy problem in Australia today. And he, with Josh Frydenberg, despite people saying that there would be mass turmoil in the parliamentary party over energy policy, he was able with Josh to bring in a consensus which surprised many.
Consensus?
it was. Yeah, it was a very strong. It was a very strong consensus
Within the government.
Within the government, I'm talking about. Yes, no. Well, all the press coverage was that there'd be turmoil with the Liberal Party, the National Party, and he was able to find a very sensible position, which is simple and rather elegant.
It hasn't stopped a former Prime Minister from continuing to express a non-consensus point of view.
No, but, this is politics. You only need 51%. You'd like 100, but That's only exists in Iraq. Did exist in Iraq and Russia. You don't get that in modern democracies as we know. So Malcolm is a good consensus person. He gets a lot of criticism, but he gets a lot of things done. And dare I say, doesn't get the credit, but that's for people to decide if they want to support him or not.
Michael, the last time we did speak about Malcolm, which, if I recall correctly, was just after the federal election.
Yeah.
And I'd asked you quite specifically what was wrong with the election campaign, and you responded by saying there was nothing wrong with the campaign. The problem was what occurred 9 months before that. In other words, you expressed a lack of confidence in the leadership. Malcolm Turnbull, has that changed?
Yes, I may not have quite have said that. With the, the two comments I make are these. In relation to the election campaign...
I can play back the tape.
Okay.
No, we
won't. Please don't in that case.
Okay.
You bore everyone to death. People will turn off in droves. They'll go and get their Mooney Valley form guides instead. The campaign was very bland. But what happened was...
That's not what you said.
Which I will repeat is the more important point is that the government did miss out on an opportunity in the months after Malcolm became leader in September 15 to lay down a concrete economic blueprint. And that whole period where we were discussing should we do this, should we do that, should we have state taxing powers, should we increase the goods and services tax, those types of things led the electorate to the view that the government didn't quite know where it wanted to take the nation. And it was during that period that we lost quite a lot of support. And it wasn't until the May budget in 2016 that the government started to sort of lay down economic markers, by which time it had actually lost quite a bit of support in the community. And that was my reflection back on that period, that it perhaps should have, in the first couple of months of Malcolm's leadership in the latter quarter of 2015, set down some economic markers, which it didn't do. And that was the precursor to an election campaign which was less than startling in its outcome. I mean, Malcolm, did he perform well during the campaign? Absolutely. I mean, so did Shorten, quite frankly. Leaders rarely make big mistakes during election campaigns these days.
We have an extraordinary situation. We have a constitutional crisis at the moment. We're not sure whether we actually have a government that has the authority, not moral authority, the legal authority to continue at the moment. We don't know whether the existing set of policies and legislations that have gone through Parliament with one single vote actually still have any legal status. There's a whole range of question marks. Then we have, dare I say, the situation with Michaela Cash, where there's a perspective that, or a point of view that essentially the government has used its power to influence the work of an independent authority like the Australian Federal Police. And we have a set of concerns around what's occurring in energy, concerns around our international relations, New Zealand, for example. How can we have confidence in this government? How can you have confidence in this government? How can you say to me that things are travelling well?
Well, I have to say none of that is true. None of that is true. I mean, if you don't mind saying, you're naught for 10 out of that. Let me go through them quickly. The government has a majority on the floor. It has the confidence of the House.
Does it? 50 out of 50?
Absolutely. The member for Indi, Cathy McGowan, has made it very clear she's supporting confidence and supply. So as to your first point, that there's...
She would take that bill by bill.
No, that's a very different question to confidence and supply. Mm. So of course independents can judge bills one by one, but if there's a motion of no confidence or there's a question of whether supply will be blocked, Cathy McGowan has said she'll support the government, which is completely a legitimate thing to do because they have a majority on the floor of the parliament. The Deputy Prime Minister has to reconsist his seat. Yes, we know that. Michaela Cash was misled by a staff member, which was appalling by that staff member, but that happened. Did she mislead the Senate? No. In the same way that Whitlam in 1975 said to the House of Representatives, he made certain comments about Rex Connor, which were untrue, but that was because Connor had misled him and Whitlam got up in the House of Reps, as you well remember, as young men at the time.
Well, most of our listeners weren't even born then, Michael.
Michael is channeling Gough. I love it.
Well, I am, because I was listening on my old radio at the time, and he was accused of misleading the House, and Whitlam said, I did because I myself was misled. So he didn't resign, and nor should he. He was misled by a minister whose views accepted in good faith. Malcolm has largely put to bed the basic tenets of the energy policy going forward. We know there's a lot of detail. We know that. But he's put down some basic tenants about supply in the energy market.
It's an 8-page document, I believe.
Yeah, but as I said, there's a lot of detail to come. I mean, this is the most complex thing you've ever seen, this energy debate. So of course he's not going to do it on a 1-page, you know, 5-point document. So of course it's complex, but he's you know, taken that off the front pages. But this is politics. Of course there are unanswered issues and there's turmoil. But is the government stable? Does it have a majority? Yes. Does it know what it's doing? Yes. Is it led by a very good, decent Prime Minister? Yes, it is.
That's great. You've actually changed your view on that, so it's really encouraging to hear that.
No, I haven't changed my view at all.
Don't verbal.
You think I'm half asleep and you're going to verbal?
No, not at all. Not at all.
You're thinking, now, you know, Robert Doyle did suggest there was a horse you should back, and I'm just trying to think, because when I tweeted that you're on today, and that you'd be better putting your money on the horses at Caulfield than on Barnaby Joyce.
Is the horse called Bernie Finn by any chance?
No. Oh, no, that'd be a nag. Yeah, Bernie Finn, now come on. He's had something to say. You've got to be able, and he's mentioned you, you've got to be able to respond to that. Come on.
Look, there was a misunderstanding between a couple of members yesterday, and fortunately that's been resolved. But, you know, I've said to people that, you know, we're in a completely new world these days. This is what people got to understand in politics. I mean, a lot of our members, I'm sure in the Labor Party too, get very sensitive to Facebook, Twitter, etc. And I've said, look, 30 years ago, if someone had a complaint, they'd send you a letter or a telegram or a telex, or they'd even use the phone, those old black phones. These days, it's social media. So people have private conversations in public all day long, and of course in political parties there is conflict, so people go onto social media, put out their views, thinking that that's the way discourse takes place this day. And a lot of this, I'm not blaming him for it, but a lot of this is added to by the way in which President Trump behaves, which is to give us the benefit of his wisdom on a daily basis, usually about his Republican colleagues, often about his cabinet.
Hardly a good role model for Australian governance.
Well, Bernie Finn channeling Donald Trump.
No. The point I'm trying to make is that the conversations which you would and discourse which were historically in private or on the phone or by mail or in person, people feel the need these days to go onto social media and express their views. And that's what they do. The whole world has changed. The whole world of communication has changed. So whereas people say, oh, there's a bit of turmoil. No, it's not turmoil. It's now the norm. You know, it's a public debate about private matters, and that's the way it is these days.
However, Bernie Finn did say that there was some serious infighting, and he said that you knew about it, and the way that things continued, there were elements of the Liberal Party who were quite happy for Labor to win the next election. You knew about that, and what are you going to do about it?
Well, there's nobody at all in the Liberal Party who wants Daniel Andrews to be Premier at the next election. Nobody. But, of course, there is a view that if people are publicly arguing, does that help your side? No, but does it really change any votes? Not really. I mean, Labor members have sued each other in the Victorian Supreme Court recently. Is that going to lose Labor any votes? No. The electorate are concerned about what affects them, what affects their families and what affects their communities. They're the issues that people vote on. If two people are having a fight over in another suburb over something, does that affect them? Are they interested in that? No. Does it influence them? No. You know, does the CFA influence people? Yes. Does the closure of Hazel influence people? Yes. Do crime gangs influence people? Yes, of course they do.
Do lying politicians influence the outcome?
Do what?
Lying politicians.
Of course. They're the things that matter. So, you know, as I was saying at the outset, I mean, when you get older, when you understand these things, you understand what affects people. And quite frankly, if there's a bit of an argument between a couple of people in one political party, does it influence any votes? It doesn't influence any votes at all. Now, as I said, in the Labor Party at the minute, they're having these brawls over pre-selections in the western suburbs. It's gone into the Supreme Court. There are arguments that Labor are having in terms that they've never had publicly before. Does it affect a single vote? No. Why? Because it doesn't affect people. It affects the Labor Party. Arguments in the Liberal Party affect Liberal Party members. But what affects people and what people are interested in is how public policy affects them, their family and their community. And these internecine arguments between people have zero impact on electoral results. And people know that these days that's how public debate is, as I was saying. This is where, I mean, Trump challenged his own Secretary of State to an IQ test. He said his Attorney General was hopeless. He's sacked most of the people that helped bring him to power, who he said were outstanding people. Now, I'm just making a comment on
I've got to say, Michael, bring it on. I think you know what people do want is good public policy, and that's what you're arguing, and I fully support and back what you're saying. I think that we should move away from the politics of the personality to the politics of good public policy.
People are sick of this stuff. It's like, you know, older people are worried about security in the house, food on the table, and the cost of electricity.
And young people can't afford to pay their rent.
Yeah.
Young people can't afford to buy a house.
Yeah.
They can't pay their rent. I mean, one of my sons pays $600 a week. Unfortunately, he's working and his partner works. $600 a week for a smallish two-bedroom flat in South Bank, or maybe it's $550 a week. That's after-tax money. That's $800 or $900. That is extraordinary, extraordinary rent.
And that's why we need. And that's why we need good public policy and leadership. And I don't think we're getting that from Canberra at the moment.
Yeah. Well, look, I hear you. I think we are. Of course, because we're in a and no one likes hearing about this, and people go, "Oh, drone on." But because we're in a shocking budgetary situation, where
it's great. It's great that we agree on something.
Yeah, it is. Governments have racked up such horrible debts. The governments don't have the money that they should have, and we're running these massive deficits. And this has to end at some stage. I mean, there are half a trillion dollars in debt. Budgets of $30 to $40 billion a year. I mean, this is unsustainable.
It is.
Unsustainable federally. I mean, we can't, the country can't keep going on like this. We know where that leads. And so, of course, there are massive pressures on the public purse. And, you know, at the same time, we have to fund things like the NDIS, which is a magnificent policy, which was a bipartisan policy of both.
The NBN.
You know, that is exemplary public policy. Well, the NBN, you know, we've always had concerns about. I mean, Kevin Rudd, in all of his inexperience as a Labor Prime Minister, he was a Walter Mitty figure who had grandiose plans with no experience on how to carry these things out, lumbering us with a policy which would have run into $70, $80, $90 billion. I mean, I was talking to someone yesterday who, in a company, who was sort of thinking about, you know, inventing a new technology. Even though there's best of breed technology available, they wanted to think about, you know, spending a lot of money developing their own technology. And I said, well, look, for every one Apple, there's 10,000 that weren't.
Mm.
You could spend millions developing this technology and either have it fail or have it succeed and be superseded in 2 to 3 years' time. I mean, the technological changes we're seeing are extraordinary. And, you know, to place a massive bet, which is what Rudd did on this, you know, like it's, you know, cabling the whole nation, fine at the time. But, you know, if you're placing these massive bets on new technology, boy, you can be obsolete in years.
I mean, Michael, we've actually run out of time, unfortunately.
We have, and sorry about that, but I have got...
That's right.
I have, and I am going to let you go, but Robert Doyle's tip for you was tell him to back Boom Time at 50 to 1.
In the Caulfield Cup.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, I'll make a note of that. Could you tell His Excellency from me that I think that was last Saturday?
Oh, well, you know, he's always...
If I was on the show last Saturday, I could have done that. But
right. Well, I don't know. If it's running at... You never know with Robert. It might be running at the Cox Plate.
It's not. It ran last Saturday.
Oh, okay. Is it still running?
If you're talking,
probably broken its leg.
If you're talking to His Excellency, tell him I think Winks. All right. But don't tell anyone.
Okay. Could
Michael, be. Thank you very much for your
thank
time
you.
This morning.
Please.
Always great
thank
to have you,
you
on
thank
on
you,
air.
And, bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.